Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's program. Today's program may be recorded. At this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode. However, later in the program, you will have the opportunity to register to ask a question by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. It is now my pleasure to turn the program over to Greg Ayers. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good afternoon. This is Greg Ayers, CFO of inContact. Welcome to our Q2 2015 conference call. I will begin the call with some prepared remarks, and then I'll turn the call over to CEO Paul Jarman to review our second quarter results. Finally, I will provide additional detail on our financial results for the quarter before opening it up for Q&A. For access to our news release and other information about inContact, please visit our website at www.incontact.com. The purpose of today's call is to provide you with information regarding our second quarter 2015 results. Some of our discussion and responses to your questions may contain forward-looking statements, which are subject to risks, uncertainties, and assumptions. Should any of these risks or uncertainties materialize, or should our assumptions prove to be incorrect, actual company results could differ materially from these forward-looking statements. These risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, as well as other information on potential risk factors that could affect our financial results, are included in our filings with the SEC, including our most recent report on Form 10-Q, particularly under the heading Risk Factors. During the call, we may offer incremental metrics to provide additional insight into our business or quarterly results. Please be advised this detail may be one-time and may or may not be provided in the future. Now I'll turn the call over to Paul Jarman. Paul?
Thank you, Greg, and thank you to everyone for joining our call this afternoon. I'm pleased to report that revenues for the quarter are at record levels. Sales through our partner channel are increasing, and we continue to see great success in winning against competitors. In Q2, we continued to grow revenues at a very strong pace. Software revenues came in at $34.1 million, a 41% increase over the same quarter one year ago. Total revenues increased by 29% to $53.1 million. In addition, we now have 80 customers billing over $500,000 versus 63 a year ago. We saw strength across our product spectrum: core ACD/IVR, predictive dialer technology, and WFO software. We continue to dominate our market as a leading pure-play cloud provider, driving the most cloud revenue in the industry. Now let's take a look at bookings during the quarter. We added 127 new contracts, which is a 27% increase over Q2 of 2014, 74 from new logos and 53 from upsells to existing customers. While the growth rate of 3% in Q2 bookings was below our historical average, we remain confident in our ability to grow recurring software revenues above 30%, and we are raising software revenue guidance for the full year. Greg will cover this in more detail later in the call. As you look at the numbers, there are three factors that support a higher software revenue growth rate than you might expect given the percent growth in Q2 bookings. First, I want to emphasize how important same-store sales are to overall software growth. This is becoming more significant because of the addition of follow-on incremental seats with the larger companies we are now closing. For example, we capture most of that usage in the same-store sales metric. We report same-store sales on a sequential basis, often 1%-3% growth per quarter. The compounding effect of steady same-store sales growth over the course of a full year is quite significant. In 2014, the total impact of same-store sales generated approximately an 11% increase in software revenues. In each of the last 3 years, and also for the first half of 2015, the growth in cumulative same-store sales revenue has been greater than the dollar loss of attrition. This adds to the overall software revenue growth rate beyond new customer bookings. We expect this positive trend to continue indefinitely. The second factor is the actual dollar value of bookings. Our software bookings for the quarter approximated $10 million in estimated new annual contract value relative to our Q2 software revenue of $34.1 million. It's important to note that this level of bookings is sufficient to drive approximately 30% growth in recurring software revenues. This absolute revenue growth rate is significantly higher than the bookings growth rate posted in the quarter. Third is our confidence in the sales pipeline for the second half of this year. We've expanded our partner channel, we've hired additional salespeople, and we are working on a number of significant opportunities, some of which moved from second to third quarter. The combination of these three factors, in addition to the very strong second quarter revenue, gives us confidence to upwardly revise software revenue guidance for the year. Now I'd like to share some more details about the deals closed in the second quarter. We won over 60% of deals against our primary competitors, including both cloud players and premise providers. We saw growth in new enterprise customers, as well as with expansion contracts with large customers in healthcare, insurance, and state and local government. In Q2, we closed two noteworthy deals in the healthcare industry. The first is a new customer that provides consulting, sales, and clinical support for healthcare companies. When fully implemented, this specialized outsourcer will have over 200 agents on the InContact platform. Another major deal came in a Fortune 50 company, a long-standing customer in the healthcare industry, who is adding a new business unit with over 150 agents. State and local government is another vertical where we continue to grow. One of the country's largest cities is rolling out the InContact solution to a new division with over 500 agents. We now have a separate sales team working with those carrier partners that have established relationships with key decision makers in state and local governments. The pay-as-you-go billing model and flexibility of the cloud is driving rapid adoption with government entities at all levels. In May, we passed the one-year mark since the acquisition of Optivity, and we are making steady progress moving Optivity premise customers to a recurring billing model. As an example, in Q2, we closed a landmark deal with a long-standing Optivity customer. This Fortune 100 insurance company has now deployed over 2,000 agents with the Optivity WFO solution on a subscription basis. I would like to now highlight the strength of our go-to-market and partner strategy. Our focus and investment in expanding our distribution model is propelling us forward with greater reach and scalability in sales and our capacity for implementation. We are seeing steady growth in our OEM partners, including Verizon, UniFi, and RingCentral, as well as other partners, including carriers, VARs, and referral partners. Our new partnership with RingCentral is off to a great start. We closed 10 contracts in Q2, and we have over 100 new opportunities already in the pipeline for the second half of 15. RingCentral is the largest pure cloud player in the unified communications space. With their leadership and established customer base, this is a strategic opportunity for us to drive revenue and also to compete effectively in the SMB market with companies who are looking for a combined contact center and UC solution. We have expanded our sales team to support our go-to-market partners. We are taking our partner program to a new level by offering joint marketing activities, materials, and by supporting partner-led field events. In Q2, we held our first ever partner conference with attendees from all of our major partners and many new partners of all types, including PBX, carrier, VARs, and referral partners. We will be adding meaningful partnerships, that will expand this distribution channel. In May, we launched our spring product release that included updated features in the personal connection, our patented no-pause dialer, and new features in our cloud WFO suite. We continue to win on our intellectual property. We added 3 new patents for the quarter, which brings us to a total of 17 for the company. With every release, we continue to provide new APIs and resources for our rapidly expanding developer ecosystem. Our open platform and these developer tools are great competitive advantage because they support customization with our enterprise customers, and they fuel our partner ecosystem, which now has over 80 partners. This spring, we also launched an upgrade to the popular InContact agent for Salesforce with an easy-to-use interface to handle inbound and outbound voice, email, voicemail, and InContact chat interactions. All of these innovations continue to distinguish InContact as the industry leader. As confirmed this week by the respected research firm Ovum, InContact has been recognized as a market leader in its newly published Ovum Decision Matrix for 2015. We received top scores in every category, including the highest scores in customer sentiment. Quoted from the report, InContact has established a commanding market position with a product that is widely accepted as best of breed. Now, let me address some important new initiatives regarding profitability. First, we have successfully implemented our new billing system. This new system expands our capabilities with partners and has created an operational foundation around which we can now automate, scale, and leverage additional business processes across the company. Further in Q2, we conducted a deep dive into certain key components of our processes and operations. We identified a number of investment opportunities that will enable us to further scale and leverage our business model. We will take advantage of opportunities to automate key business processes and leverage our infrastructure. For example, we will automate the customer onboarding process, which we believe can save millions of dollars once fully implemented. Another example is a 12-month data center infrastructure project, which will save us approximately $1.8 million annually when completed. We believe these investments will enable significant leverage by reducing our per-unit costs. They will create efficiency across the company and enable us to achieve sustained non-GAAP operating income. Beyond the impact on profitability, these actions will help us drive greater competitive differentiation and revenues by competing on value, innovation, and customer satisfaction, and ultimately strengthening our leadership position in the cloud contact center market. Now I'd like to turn the time over to Greg.
Thank you, Paul. We achieved strong results in the second quarter, and now I will provide more details about the financial performance. The financial results I will discuss are presented on both a GAAP and non-GAAP basis. However, all revenue figures are GAAP. Please refer to the press release for non-GAAP revenue amounts. At this point, I would also like to remind everyone of the safe harbor statement made at the beginning of the call. First, let's look at the software segment, which includes all revenue related to the delivery of our software application and associated professional services. For Q2 2015, I'm happy to report that software segment revenue increased to $34.1 million, a 41% increase over last year's $24.2 million. Optivity, which we acquired in the second quarter of 2014, contributed $5.2 million in revenues in Q2. Excluding the Optivity contribution, our software segment revenues grew 35% year over year. In Q2, we did not recognize any guaranteed revenues from our partnership with Unify, compared to $1.6 million of such revenues in Q2 2014. The 3 key drivers of our recurring software revenue are customer retention, existing customer utilization, and new contracts. Our software revenue retention rate for the quarter remained above 93%, a level we're very pleased with. Remember, unlike some of the other companies in this space, we measure retention as a percentage of revenues, not the number of customer accounts, and we exclude upsells from this calculation. The second driver of quarterly software revenue growth is the variable utilization of software services by existing customers. This metric fluctuates due to seasonality, macroeconomic conditions, and customer service activities, as well as the revenue generated from the sale of additional services to existing customers. It's similar in concept to the same-store sales metric as used in the retail industry, and it excludes attrition and new customer revenues. Typically, the June quarter is the weakest period for same-store sales, averaging nearly a 1% decline in recent years. This year, we experienced a 0.7% sequential decrease in utilization. More importantly, year-to-date Q2, same-store sales are up 3% versus 1.7% at this time last year. The third and final driver of our Q2 software revenue growth is revenue from new customers, that is, contracts not yet included in the same-store sales metric. We closed 127 new contracts in the quarter, 74 from new customers, and 53 upsells to existing accounts, an increase of 27%. As Paul noted, we set a new record for Q2 bookings. We estimate that the expected future value of these contracts will be approximately 3% higher than the estimated value of bookings in Q2 of 2014. I'd like to take a moment to describe how InContact calculates bookings. We determine bookings based on the estimated annual contract value of new subscription software sales. This approach does not reflect the full value of a multi-year contract. It excludes any estimated network connectivity revenues, nor does it include any perpetual license software revenues generated by the sale of WFO modules. Another significant trend we've noticed recently is that new, larger accounts often start small and quickly scale up to seat levels in excess of those used in estimating our bookings value. For example, a recent account signed in Q2 of 2014, which was counted at $170,000 in ACV, is currently billing at $700,000 in ACV, or $530,000 more than we counted in the bookings calculation. Q2 2015 software segment gross margin was 57.8% compared to 57.7% a year ago. On a non-GAAP basis, software gross margin was 71.4 compared to 72.1 a year ago. GAAP and non-GAAP gross margins were impacted during the periods by the absence of the $1.6 million in guaranteed revenue from Unify, which was present in 2014. Our second segment is network connectivity, which includes all communication services provided to our software customers, as well as to legacy telco clients. Network connectivity segment revenue for Q2 2015 was $19 million, a 12% increase over the $16.9 million in Q2 of last year. Gross margin for the network connectivity segment was 37% in Q2, up meaningfully from 35.8% in Q2 of 2014. Operating margin for this segment was a robust 25.7% in Q2, a continued improvement from the 25.1 in Q2 of 2014. With the exception of accounts sold by telecom-based channel partners such as Verizon, contact center prospects typically request that we provide their connectivity services, and this is a distinct competitive advantage for InContact. In Q2, approximately 96% of our revenue was generated by customers using our contact center software and software-related network connectivity. Consolidated revenue for Q2 increased to $53.1 million, a 29% increase from last year's $41.1 million. GAAP consolidated margin was 50.3%, up from 48.7% a year ago. On a non-GAAP basis, consolidated gross margin increased to 59.3%, up from 57.6% last year. Total operating expenses were $32.2 million in Q2. A 24% increase from Q2 2014 levels of 25.9. sales and marketing expenditures rose 25%, while the rate of growth in R&D spending was 29%. For the second quarter, G&A spending was 20% above the levels in the corresponding period a year ago. G&A expenses were actually down 2.3% on a sequential basis and decreased as a percentage of revenue 100 basis points. Operating loss for Q2 was $5.4 million, a decline of 8% from the operating loss of $5.9 million in Q2 of 2014. On a non-GAAP basis, the operating loss for Q2 was $2.6 million compared to $3.1 million in Q2 of 2014, an improvement of $500,000. Adjusted EBITDA, a non-GAAP measure, is an important metric of our operating results due to the significant amount of depreciation and amortization resulting from the acquisitions of software, customer bases, and network technology, as well as the amortization of capitalized software development costs and stock-based comp. Adjusted EBITDA was $1.4 million for Q2, substantially greater than the $90,000 recorded in Q2 of 2014, but down by roughly $1 million from the first quarter of this year due to the sequential increases in sales and marketing and R&D. This was our 14th consecutive quarter with positive adjusted EBITDA. At quarter end, we had $52.8 million in cash and cash equivalents, $64.7 million in short-term investments, and access to an additional $15 million under our line of credit. Recall that in March, we completed the sale of $115 million of 2.5% 7-year convertible notes, convertible at $14.23 a share. Turning now to guidance for 2015, I would like to remind everyone of the Safe Harbor statement at the beginning of today's call. Based on the strong software revenue results we've achieved in the first half of the year, we're raising our guidance for the full year. In 2015, we anticipate consolidated revenues to be between $211 million and $214 million for the full year. We expect total software revenues to be between $135 million and $138 million for the full year. This represents a 34 to 37% growth rate for software revenues. Based on the leveraged investments Paul mentioned previously, we expect adjusted EBITDA will be between $8 and $9 million. Eliminating the step down in Unify guaranteed revenue from the equation yields an improvement in adjusted EBITDA over last year of between approximately 40 and 50%. For EPS on a GAAP basis, we anticipate a net loss of 38 cents to 43 cents a share in 2015. On a non-GAAP basis, we expect a net loss of 16 to 20 cents per share for the full year. Operator, we're now ready to take questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to register to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. At any time, if you found that your question has already been answered, you may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, it is star and one to register to ask a question. We'll go first to Catherine Egbert with Piper Jaffray. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. I just want to follow up on the bookings commentary, just to be sure I have it right. So it was about $10 million in bookings, up 3% year-on-year, so that was about $9.7 million last June. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and then just to confirm, too, that it's a 3-to-1 ratio, Paul, that you mentioned, roughly between software revenue and bookings. Is that correct? And also, if that holds for the quarter, would it also hold for the year, that 3-to-1 ratio?
That's correct. So as I mentioned before, as you take the $10 million in bookings that we created in ACV, and you take that against the software revenue run rate for the quarter, and you apply that, that gives you enough bookings to sustain a 30% growth rate. And that would be before you add some of the benefit of same-store sales.
Right, exactly. Okay, so I wanted to be sure I had that correct. And given, you know, sort of the size of the company, and you're getting, you know, pretty big, you know, software's obviously majority now, almost two-thirds. I mean, should we expect that the bookings become increasingly less important going forward, that, you know, really the same-store sales, given the size of the install base, becomes sort of more important? Would that be okay to assume?
I think the thing, Catherine, here to know is that we do have multiple levers to increasing revenue. First of all, we have same-store sales. Secondly, we have the bookings. And it's important to remember that bookings growth is not equal to the value of what we book to revenue. And as you walk through those different pieces, it's not as good of a barometer as it was, especially when we add additional partners and additional larger customers who often increase the orders without sending us a new booking to have, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yes, I think I understand. And then you commented on RingCentral. Can you add any more color there? What does the pipe look like for them and maybe for some of the other partners in the second half?
You bet. So what I mentioned for RingCentral was, even though it was only launched for a month in the quarter, we did have 10 deals that we signed, and we have about 100 new companies that we're actively working with them. So a very nice and quick start out with them as a partner, and we are very excited about what that might mean for us going forward, both for the bookings opportunities and also how we can combine the PBX and Contact Center together to give us a very complete mid-market offering. And so secondly, we see some very nice opportunities with our carriers, especially some significant deals. In that area, we have some very nice deals that, frankly, we had in second that got pushed to third. And as you know, as a CEO, you never can go backwards on those. You just go forward. But we see some really nice second half of the year opportunities with them. Third is we keep adding additional partners. And in the VAR area and in the PBX area, we're seeing some nice step outs in new deals in those areas. And so all of that is giving us some nice confidence in that we are adding the scale necessary in our distribution model to match the scale of our growing revenues.
Okay, great. And then last one for me, and I'll let someone else take it. You sort of raised guidance for the year. Any commentary about approaching operating break-even in Q4?
You bet. So two things there. So first of all, as a company, we're on track for our own, what I'll call model as it relates to, you know, our EBITDA for the year and how we've approached fourth quarter. Just remember that with the debt offering, that created some interest, one. And two is we did say that we are making some short-term investments to create scale. And I want you to know that though that has some temporary cost, either in investing in automation or second in what I'll call transitional costs as we make some infrastructure investments, the return on investment in these areas are significant, especially when you remember that we're a company now of over $200 million in run rate, and an automation of processes can save literally now millions of dollars where they wouldn't have been so impactful before. And as we're growing our infrastructure, those same investments can really help solidify long-term continuous non-GAAP operating profits. So if you add some of that investment in, that will lower that break even, but it will net to our benefit in 2016.
Sure, understood. Okay, thank you very much. Good job.
Thank you, and we'll go next to Jeff Van Rhee with Craig-Hallum. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks, Paul. On the bookings front, can you just talk in a little more detail how the quarter played out as you progressed? I mean, clearly, at least historically, this 20 to 40 has been the target range. Did it sort of steadily just not see deals closing at the pace you would normally see? Did it fall off more at the end? Just maybe touch on linearity to start.
You bet. So first of all, our linearity was decent, and I would say two things there. One is, you know, you have to remember that we have a bookings metric. You know, we still play to revenue. So a couple of quick examples. So we had an opportunity in the quarter to make a deal significantly larger. Making it larger pushed it to the next quarter. So it'll never affect our revenue generation, but it does affect our bookings, and that did happen in literally the last week or two of the quarter. So we had a couple bigger deals push right at the end, and that, you know, obviously gives us a strong third quarter and took some out of second. But what I'll say is this, is that as we look at it for the whole year, and often bookings can ebb and flow, you know, we're still very confident in our stated range that for the year our bookings will be between 20 and 40. And as I said to Catherine, more importantly is that the actual booking dollars are supporting our growth rates that we've talked to the street about.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, obviously the bookings have got to grow over time, or you start to run into law of large, you know, larger numbers when the denominator gets bigger. So, I guess as you look at the other partners, I mean, obviously Verizon. Historically, you've commented on them as a percent of the bookings. Could you give a little sense of either bookings or pipe, what kind of traction you saw there?
You know what? Verizon's steady. They've been steady. So really, it's been a steady process. I think as you look at people like Verizon, they're going to ebb and flow a little bit because their deals are bigger. But if you take it over the quarter or a multi-quarter process, they've been steady.
And with the push-outs, had you seen normal close rates, would it have been enough to have you in that 20 to 40% range, or was it more a function of the more a lead gen issue? You know, the funnel wasn't getting populated at the top of the funnel, so to speak.
So I would just say, first of all, we feel comfortable with the funnel. Certainly, in normal close percentages, we would have been very comfortable within that range. And so I wouldn't say that I see any aberration in the funnel or any aberration in our wins or losses. Really, I'd say it's a function of timing and also a function that in some cases revenue is coming through where we can't book it. And so that's why we're confident to raise the guidance and why we're confident in the go forward growth rates.
Yep, and with respect to the sales side, so maybe redundant to your answer just now, but just to clarify, the no structural changes you wouldn't anticipate based on what you just saw and the way the team executed in the quarter, that there's no meaningful adaptations to process and anything meaningful to call out.
No, I think, you know, I would just say that we continue to remember that as we have more partners, we don't have absolute control of the timing sometimes of the deals. And so that's not a thing we would change. This is something that we have to always be cognizant of.
Yeah, got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And we'll go next to Brian Schwartz with Oppenheimer. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my questions here this afternoon. Continuing down the line of questions around the bookings, do you guys want to comment at all? I know it's kind of an end of the year comment, but do you want to comment at all on the backlog growth that you saw in the quarter, the total contract value growth? And Greg, did you see shifts maybe in contract duration length this quarter compared to the year ago quarter that, you know, maybe affected that ACV comparison?
Yeah, Brian, I would say that we didn't see any meaningful trends with regard to the typical contract life, which, again, for smaller customers is usually a one-year contract with an auto-renew provision. With larger customers, they're usually 3 to 5 year commitments. So there were no meaningful changes there. I think, again, as Paul alluded to, a little bit of lumpiness with regard to the productivity from our channel. Obviously, we have a little bit less visibility to that than our direct, but no fundamental disruptions in the sales process.
Great. Yeah, and I would just add to that, Brian, is we feel good. We saw a very nice additional creation of funnel during Q2 going towards the back half of the year, and we also are starting to get certain key partners really up and moving, too. And we've already seen some of that benefit in Q3 with some of the newer partners.
Okay. Greg, I apologize if I missed it on your commentary, but did you get the metric on what the channel booking mix was? And maybe while you source that, if I could just ask Paul the question. You know, you're reiterating your bookings guidance here for the year. You've done, you know, less than that here through the first half. So that's going to assume an acceleration in the bookings trend to meet that target in the second half. Can you talk a little bit about some of the levers that you have to pull here in the second half that's giving you guys confidence here to raise your revenue guidance and reiterate that bookings target?
Well, first of all, you know, as we went through second quarter, we didn't lose some of those key deals. We just had them push. So that means that they're still going to happen, one. Two is that we see nice pipeline coming from these partners and our own direct sales team that helps us with that confidence. And three is if you take that weighted average or you take the 20 to 40, as we've talked to in the past, and you take the four quarters together, we certainly feel like we can end up between that range.
Great. And then maybe last question, I'll just pass it along just to kind of give us some comfort here. I assume that the new ACV growth sequentially in the quarter, that did grow sequentially compared to Q1? Thanks.
I'm not quite sure if I understand the question, but we certainly booked more than we did in Q1, if that's the question.
I think what Brian was alluding to there was that, yes, Brian, I think every quarter we've seen new bookings grow before they come into the same-store sale metric. So we'll close deals in Q1, we'll turn them up in Q2, and then they will steadily ramp to full productivity with regard to that annual contract value. And then to circle back on your previous question, the bookings were pretty much evenly split between channel partners and direct, so almost 50-50.
Very good. Thank you for taking my questions this afternoon.
And we'll go next to Mike Lattimore with Northland Capital. Your line is open.
Great, thanks. So on these, I guess, Paul, you mentioned a couple of bigger deals that moved out of the second quarter. I guess, just to clarify, have they closed in the third quarter already? And then second, I don't know, how many seats would they represent in aggregate?
So, Mike, first of all, some have closed and some are closing. And, you know, I really don't want to give a number of seats, but I'll just say that they're significant. Certainly, as we look at our average deals, they're significant to us and significant to our bookings. And some, as I mentioned, some have come in and some are coming in. And some are coming from current customers who are just add-on sales.
Yeah, okay, got it. And then I guess just if I normalize the revenues in the quarter for Uptivity and Unify, I've come up with something like 47% software growth. Does that sound about right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And Mike, one thing I would just add there that's of interest is you look at that 47% and you remember that our average bookings really is really around 30 or low 30s. You know, that's almost 17% growth over the actual bookings growth number, which helps demonstrate how we have revenue coming from other sources that's supporting the revenue growth.
Okay. And I believe Uptivity grew a little bit sequentially, but the general trend on the software side should be down over time, shouldn't it, in terms of enterprise software sales?
Well, in terms of revenue recognition, right? So the whole idea is to migrate that business from what used to be principally a premise-based immediate recognition business model to in-the-cloud subscription. So obviously the impact of that would be potentially lower sequential revenue, but you're building that long-term sustained recurring revenue base.
And what percent of new customers are trying to go with the Uptivity kind of feature cloud offering as part of their overall suite purchase?
Well, so first of all, we have the opportunity to both sell Verint and Uptivity. Mm-hmm. And as you look at those two together, I'd say, especially the enterprise side, probably about 50% of the enterprise orders are coming in with WFO. And so we're seeing a couple things there. First of all, is that WFO is a key part to the sell. And secondly, we're seeing that our sales teams can sell recurring WFO. And that's supportive of that transition of that Uptivity revenue from one time to recurring. And also it's saying that it's an important part of our differentiation and our ability to win deals is that's part of that equation.
And then just back on the indirect versus direct mix, it sounds like you're putting a little more emphasis on the partner channel this year. I guess should that indirect, percent sort of trend up to maybe average more like 60% of retirement?
Our goal is to keep it 50-50. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's going to fluctuate a little bit quarter over quarter because of deals and deal sizes and new partners, but we are keeping and growing our direct sales team, so it should, in general, represent about a 50-50 split.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, and we'll take our last question from Mark Chappell with Benchmark. Your line is open.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my call. Paul, based on your total revenue guidance and your software revenue guidance, it appears that the connectivity revenue growth rate is really coming down in the back half of the year here. I was wondering if you could just talk about what dynamics you're seeing in that business.
You bet. So what we see there, Mark, is a couple of things. So first of all, as more of our bookings come from a PBX or carrier, we would not be including telecom in those deals. So the strength of that growth would lower new contracts with telephony. Secondly, as we are seeing strength in the offering of WFO, that's adding additional software revenue against the telephony. We still see about a 90-plus percent attach rate when we sell it directly on our own direct sales team. So that's not really changed. But what has changed is the mix based on the partners and based on more and more part of the cell being WFO, which doesn't need or include the telephony.
Great, thank you. And then one final question. Paul, in your prepared remarks, you also talked about a few productivity initiatives. And I was wondering if you could just go through those briefly one more time.
You bet. So Mark, one of our key goals here is that we're focusing on both growth and creating financial leverage. And so as we have the balance sheet and the skill in the company to really attack both at the same time. So always a fair number of our initiatives are related to growth, but we have more and more initiatives now related directly to scale and profits. So in these cases, as I mentioned, we've spent the last year redoing and re-implementing a whole new billing system. That really served as a key foundation for additional automation. That system is now up and running, and we're building from it across other parts, such as automation of the customer setup and other areas like that. So in that area, I mentioned that we see millions of dollars of savings in the process with payroll and other things to have that automated. Secondly, we're seeing, as we're growing our infrastructure, ways to really be more cost-effective there. So we began a 12-month project to change how we use some of our infrastructure or our facilities for managing all of the computers and other things. And so over the next 12 months, we're taking action there. And at the end of that, it'll be about a $1.8 million annual savings going forward with that complete. So we are making some short-term investments in some tools, some automation, and some overlap expenses for infrastructure that allows us really long-term leverage, which really becomes very large numbers as we grow the revenue and as we keep scaling. So we just see this as an opportunity to keep leveraging what we think is a key part of our future strategy, which is getting to non-GAAP profits and continuing the growth rate.
Great. Thank you.
And thank you. I believe that is all the time we have for questions today.
Well, first of all, thank you for being on the call. And in closing, I'd just like to say that You know, first of all, we're excited that we're exceeding the revenue targets we set out at the first of the year. And secondly, that we believe we are taking action and have an actionable plan of really moving in contact from a company that can produce positive EBITDA to a company that can start to produce non-GAAP operating profitability. So we look at those as both two key focuses going forward. We appreciate your time today, and have a great day.
And thank you for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. This does conclude today's program. We certainly do appreciate everyone's participation, and you may disconnect at any time.